All right, welcome to College Baseball Fellowships. We're going to call this Locker Room Conversations. This is our first ever, so if we mess it up, go easy on us. If you were going to do a baseball-related podcast, you'd probably be pretty excited to have Chris Davis and Chris Carpenter as your first guest, and I'm glad to have the guys here with me. So what we're going to do, we're going in these locker room conversations to really have the opportunity to really have raw and open conversations with former and hopefully some current Major League Baseball players, and maybe even some high level guys that didn't get to the bigs at points in a kind of conversation around faith and life in baseball in a way that may not make my late mother happy at times, but we're going to go with that. And so before I do introductions real quick, College Baseball Fellowship, really the purpose of the ministry that I got to start with Chris Davis and Carp's come along. And really it's what these guys talk about a whole lot is you're going to be a former baseball player a lot longer than you will be a baseball player. And if your identity is not in something bigger, which we believe to be Christ, you're going to be disappointed. You're going to be lost. And so the opportunity to get to guys who are playing high level college ball in those formative years is really a key point that we want to hone in on, give resources, let these guys who've been on the mountaintop and now are former players have that opportunity to talk and speak into guys and hopefully build discipleship relationships with the guys there. So real quick introductions. You probably know him, but Chris Davis. So 13 years in the bigs, started out with the Rangers, called up with the Rangers, ended up with the Baltimore Orioles. Those were kind of the formative years. All-star, two-time AL home run leader, Silver Slugger, we said All-Star. That's probably the biggest of the highlights. What am I missing? Did I insult you in any way?
No, it was okay. No, the Silver Sluggers to me is probably my favorite award because it was okay. So hard to get. Being an All-Star is obviously a huge honor too.
Sure.
Yeah, I think you nailed it.
Married to Jill, three kiddos, three young ladies that you're trying to raise there. So, and then Chris Carpenter came up into the bigs in Toronto, right? And then ended up at St. Louis Cardinals. Cy Young winner, two-time World Series, obviously All-Star. What am I missing in there? Big ones, you think?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, those are all good. I lean on to my couple comeback player of the year awards too, coming back from some major surgeries and able to fight through that and recover through that, and having your peers vote
that's
on
awesome.
You for that is pretty neat. So I like those also.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then married to Carrie, helping to raise a stepdaughter. You've got older kiddos.
You got two older kiddos, so, 20, okay. 22 son and a 19-year-old daughter.
Okay. Awesome. So, with that, CD, and I were talking to, and we'll go into how College Baseball Fellowship started and all that in a different video, different time. But we were talking to another former player, a guy who played D1 ball, a couple weeks ago. And one of the things, CD, you said was, hey, one of the things I realized was that my reputation in baseball, in Major League Baseball, like some folks have said, hey, wait a second, Chris Davis is involved with a ministry. Man, that doesn't quite compute in my head. And so I want to take a little bit of time to talk about that. And I know, you know, you talked about born in Longview, Texas, Accepted Christ really young, got to University of Texas, found the party scene, really didn't have a walk with Christ at that point, mm-hmm. got to go to Navarro Junior College, which actually turned out great. Yeah. You met Skip Johnson, and he's been a great influence in your life. But then, hey, you're in the bigs in 22. So talk a little bit about, you know, where your faith and who came into your life and what was that like? What was going on in the background? And how was God working on you in that, that maybe people in the public didn't see when you're breaking a bat over your knee or something like that?
Yeah. I think, a lot of times people see the finished product. They see what's out on the field or what's on TV and they think, you know, that they really understand and know what's going on. But I think for me, getting to the big leagues, one, at the age of 22, and two, with the team that I grew up watching, was kind of a dream come true for me, but I didn't really realize everything that came with that. So I guess I would describe myself as kind of a closet Christian. So, I mean, I knew that I had a relationship with Jesus, but it wasn't like an active and working relationship. Once I came up to the big leagues, my rookie year, I had a lot of success early on and enjoyed that success both on and off the field and liked being, you know, kind of the young, up and coming guy and the next big thing for the Rangers. And I think really, what happened was, you know, I saw the success on the field start to dwindle and start to, kind of leave me because of some of the decisions that I was making off the field. And when we talk about, when you bring up Texas, you know, I was always around the party scene. I didn't really engage in the party scene until I went to college and then really started experiencing it and kind of putting myself out there more. And I don't think it was obviously a great thing for me. I think it was something I needed to go through, but, that kind of led me to, down a different path as I got into the big leagues. And I think one thing that I think about all the time is God consistently put godly men in my life around me that were just a little bit older and a little bit further in their journey. And really I kind of gravitated toward those guys. And a lot of times it was guys in the big leagues. Sometimes it was guys in the minor leagues with me, but, I think just really trying to figure out the baseball journey as a Christian, but also still trying to fit in, it was a challenge. I mean, it was a real challenge. And I think the reason that I struggled for so many years in the Rangers organization is because I was holding on to something that really didn't carry much weight, really didn't mean anything. It was a reputation that I thought I needed to uphold, but it wasn't really who I was. And it wasn't until God almost, you know, took baseball away from me that made me realize that I needed him more than I needed anything else.
So when you talk about a reputation mm-hmm. that you felt like, what do you mean by that? Let's get deeper into it.
Yeah, I think so. Coming up early and at a young age and having success right out of the gates, you're kind of the guy. And being on a team full of really good established veteran players and being like kind of the new flavor of the week or flavor of the month, if you will, I think it just, you feel like you have to live up to that big league, yeah. you know, persona to where it's like, man, I've got to like go hit bombs and then, you know, go out and party and then like be this guy. But also at this, that, you know, deep down, I know that it's not really who I am. And I remember the very first off season, it was the winter between the end of 08 and the beginning of 09. I had everything that I wanted. I had success, I had money, I had, you know, fame, I guess, for the most part. And I was living in this downtown loft, in Dallas. And I remember waking up on a Sunday morning and I was like, not depressed, but I'm just like, man, this can't be it. You know, like the only thing I have to look forward to is like the next time I go to the bar or the next time I go to the field and work out. Like I was like, this just can't be it. And I remember saying something to my mom and she said, well, you know, have you been reading or praying or going to church, or do you even know where church is, you know? And and it was really kind of a realization where I was like, man, this, you know, we can have goals, we can have dreams, we can have aspirations, but deep down, if we don't have Christ, then all that stuff is going to leave you empty.
Yeah. Okay. we're going to go further into your story in a sec, but I'll swing to Carp here for a minute. So grew up in New Hampshire, one of the many, many great baseball players that came out of New Hampshire, right?
Yeah.
And really, if I remember right, church life wasn't really a part of your growing up a lot, right? It was,
it was present, but, there definitely wasn't a relationship there. I would say that, you know, my family were Christians, grandparents, parents, you know, younger age going to church on Sundays, but that was it. It definitely was like old school.
Yeah.
Like religion, like, yeah. You know, you just go and you're supposed to do the, like, I wasn't living it, between Sundays.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. And then, so you got in the bigs and your story was a, you know, kind of different, right? Where, talk a little bit about your time in Toronto, if I remember right, was a little tougher,
mm-hmm.
right? And then kind of where that shift came about in between Toronto and getting to St. Louis. And if I remember right, there's really kind of a major head shift there.
Yeah.
So you can talk about that a little bit and then we can talk.
Yeah. So like, you know, very similar to CD, you know, you get to the big leagues at a young age and I would say at the expectation level of all the people around you, puts a lot of pressure on you. You know, I was 22 years old. I had just turned 22. I got to big leagues pitching behind Roger Clemens, who I grew up watching pitch at Fenway. And I was expected to be like him at 22 with, you know, not a ton of experience. And, you know, you're talking about a 7-time Cy Young Award winner guy. So there was a lot of pressure around that. And again, goes back to, I live and died on every outing, every performance, what people thought of who I was. And that was parts of 6 years. It was a 5.5-year journey for myself where my performance, my ability, and the expectations of where I was supposed to be didn't live up to my potential. And it was because I was focused at that moment or during that time as on pleasing others and making sure that I looked good, right? Yeah. Not physically, but to the outside world. Had a shoulder surgery at the end of 2002, where, you know, 2002 was my first year where I kind of stepped into that number one role, where I started opening day at Fenway Park against Pedro Martinez, again, where I grew up going to,
sure.
Games. And season wasn't very good. I had the world,
yeah.
At my feet. Like, I mean, I was number one starter. I was making some money, kind of, again, very similar, making some money. I thought I was going to be a Toronto Blue Jay for the rest of my life. And I was living the life. Now, I wasn't a huge partier, at that time. And by the end of the season, I was in a sling, shoulder surgery, and released.
Yeah.
Which then found myself, you know, what am I going to do with my life? I hadn't made enough money to not work. I wasn't sure what that rehab was going to look like. And we can get into it after or later on down the road, but you know, that moment in my life, I released a lot of pressures on myself and expectations on myself. And I was okay with just being average. Didn't mean I didn't try harder or didn't try to be better than average. My competitiveness was still there, but I was okay with just whatever and whoever I was. And it released a lot of freedom and pressure on myself. And I found myself in St. Louis, and that freedom allowed me to go compete, and my potential came out.
So how did you get to that point? I don't know that that was necessarily a spiritual point so much as, you know, that was you had a shift in your mindset. Did somebody help you get there or?
No, I mean, again, it was, I kind of got there on my own. I really did. I guess my agent, Bob Lamont and Lynn Lamont, they navigated me through that time as almost, you know, father and mother figures of, you know, understanding that it's okay to be normal. And so for me, it was almost just, again, I think it was a personal shift. Yeah. Looking back now, you know, it was the Lord working in my life, letting me know that, you know, I've got you. It's going to be okay. No matter where your journey takes you, you're going to be okay. And like I said, at that period of time, it was a hard off season. I thought, you know, again, I was like, oh my gosh, I went from being this guy, I still living in New Hampshire. Everybody was like, oh, it's Chris Carpenter. And, I wasn't living up to that. So it was a hard shift, but I got to the point where I didn't care anymore. Yeah. I knew that I was going to be okay.
Yeah. No, that's cool. So let's go back to CD here for a minute. So you had like there in the background of what you're going on when we visited Baylor a while back, you talked a little bit. Let's kind of move into, you know, you got to Baltimore and then you talked a little bit there about when you were signing that big contract, kind of how the weight came in there. And then, I think you had some older dudes that were kind of pouring into you there as well. That kind of helped you walk through there, but let's walk through some of the struggles there, even though it should have been the mountaintop.
Yeah. I think really, you brought up a good point, Carb. I think there were a lot of times where God was still there and maybe I wasn't acknowledging him, but he kept me out of trouble. And he did. I mean, I think part of the struggle was shaping me to have success. And I think you appreciate success much more when you've really struggled, especially in a sport like baseball, to where everything, you know, every time you get sent down, it's on ESPN. Everybody knows every move that happens. You talk about walking around with your ERA on your forehead or your batting average on your forehead. I think that there's just so much exposure to the outside world that it's just a humbling process. Yeah. And I think really the years in Texas struggling and going down and going back and forth, I kind of came to the same realization that Carp did, where it's like, man, I'm so tired of trying to live up to everybody else's expectations. I'm going to live up to my own expectations. I'm going to work as hard as I can and I'm going to just enjoy the process. And so I think that's what really freed me up in Baltimore to have the success that I had. Now going into free agency, my agent was Scott Boras, so I knew that I was looking for, you know, a multi-year, $100 million contract. But the thing that my wife and I, Jill, talked about before we even signed or entertained, you know, a long-term deal was anything that we have, we're going to view it as the Lord giving us this to be stewards of it. And I think the reason why we both had to view it that way is neither one of us grew up wealthy. Both of us are blue-collar, working-class families. I grew up, my mom basically worked two jobs, while my dad was in and out of work as a kid. So we didn't have a lot of money. And I felt like if we continued to view the contract the way that we were talking about, that it wouldn't consume us.
Sure.
I remember signing, getting ready to sign the contract. We agreed in the middle of January around the 20th of January. And I remember waking up the next morning and I was relieved that night going to bed because it was over with. But I remember waking up the next day and sitting on the couch and it was literally like God dropped a weight of bricks on my shoulder. And I was just like, oh crap, I've got 7 more years of this and this responsibility and these expectations and all of this pressure. And you talk about being out on the it should have been the mountaintop. I think it kind of was, but I also think that it really just changed my perspective on what was expected of me. Yeah. And baseball is a really funny sport because you're really kind of back paid. You're paid on the work that you've done, not on the work that you're going to do. But there's still a huge expectation that you're going to continue to be that player. And at the time, I was just about to turn 30 in March, and I knew that physically I was – you know, I had a few good years left, but I didn't know if I had 7 full years left of it. So there was a lot of pressure. It was obviously a huge blessing, but at the same time, it was a huge responsibility.
Yeah. Well, and I think that talks to character a little bit that you had. And I think fans often will go, oh, man, that bum doesn't care. You cared more than anything, right?
Yeah.
And, And that's the, and again, the worst thing, I mean, I talk about the golf swing, and by the way, Karp is the best golfer in the room by far. But you know, even the golf swing, if I'm tight in a golf swing, right? If I've got something going on, it's going to go bad.
Yeah.
And if you can't play loose and you've got that thing weighing on you, then how much worse, right?
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. I mean, there was definitely a lot of tension. I think one of the things that is really people are misperceived that we don't care. They think that we, if we don't show emotion, that it doesn't mean anything to us. And I would say the exact opposite for me. And I think a lot with you too. In order to protect yourself, you don't want to let anybody know that it's bothering you. So you go out there and you put on a face, you put up a front, and you just try to go out there and do your job. And even though you're struggling, and really, I didn't talk about any of the struggles until a few years after I had signed the contract, and it was late in the season. And I think we've talked about this, and I'm not going to go into detail, but basically I did a Sports Illustrated article with the girl who had kind of been badgering our PR director to get a one-on-one with me. And I opened up about it, about what it meant to struggle, about how hard it was on me, about the effect that it was having on me and my family, my everyday life, you know, the emotion that I was feeling. And I think that was really the first time that I was vulnerable enough in the public light that people were like, oh, he really does care. Like, he actually cares a lot. And it opened up some cool doors for me to have some pretty unique conversations about my faith in that arena. So it was not something that I wanted to do, but, it's something I'm extremely glad that I've done on the backside of it.
Yeah. Oh, cool. So Karp, you know, from your standpoint in those years, you were killing it, in those St. Louis years, as you were going through that. But, you know, one of the things that struck me, I guess when we did kind of our kickoff lunch and you talked about, I think you said, hey, I pitched 7 innings, punched out 13, maybe no runs. I can't remember the exact stats, but they were in that, and yet miserable on the bus ride back. And I think he said, hey, down to 6-pack on the way back to the hotel or something. So, yeah. I mean, talk a little bit about what was life like there, what was going on, and then, you know.
Yeah, again, like, you know, just to comment on what CD said about our, like, we're trained to be stoic.
Sure.
Right? So nobody knows what's going on. There's people can look me up online and figure out everything about my life, right? And they can read my Wikipedia page and Google anything they want. There's pictures of me. Like, you know, there's all kinds of stuff going on. So I try to be as private and personal outside of the game. So I might come off at times unkind.
Sure.
Especially when people are getting into my private space and I'm out having dinner, things like that. I mean, I have enough exposure to where I want some privacy at times. And we're trained to do that on the field, so that nobody knows what's going on in our world. And even to the point for me, my two older kids, when I retired, like, that's what they knew of me, was an angry baseball player or a always competitive, mean guy.
And on.
Yeah. And unfortunately in my life, as I continued in that St. Louis progression, is that's kind of who I became.
Yeah.
On and off the field was a stoic, hard guy.
Yeah.
And that's not who I was at my core. At my core, I'm a kind, generous, loving person. Mm. And but the game built me into this hard, hardened heart.
Sure.
Which then came along a lot of pressure, anxiety, and all kinds of expectation with it, right? But I lived and died for it. I loved that walk from the bullpen in the biggest games of the season. I loved it, and I trained myself for it. But again, along with it came a lot of pressure and anxieties. And I'm a big anxiety guy to begin with, mm-hmm. To the point where I used to at times get sick before games, and especially when I was a kid. From the time I was 13 all the way through high school and into minor league baseball. No matter if it was hockey or baseball, I mean, I would throw up before every single game.
Okay.
And anyways, moving into that was the anxieties and pressures. I learned that I could deal with those sure. with alcohol. And that's where I started getting into the fun big league life. And not that I was ever an out of control drunk. I didn't wake up and start drinking in the morning and all that other stuff, but I enjoyed my six pack at night after a game sitting around with the guys. It allowed me to relax, and be at ease and those things. So, you know, I started really just going down that path of my life was built around performing on the field and being as stoic and consistent off the field to put on this face of who I was, because I had to work really hard at it. I couldn't let myself through it. And the answer to what you originally brought up was, yeah, there was many a times where I was so miserable off the field because I didn't like who I was. I didn't like what I was doing. I would take that anger out on the field. And I'd show up. I'll never forget. I had a game in Kansas City, pitching against the Royals. I didn't sleep, all night. And, there was some personal situations going on that, kept me up all night. And I remember getting on the bus and I went to the ballpark, and that was, you know, again, 7-8 innings, whatever it was, punched out a bunch of guys, sat on the bench after the game. And Tony La Russa came up to me and he's like, man, that, like, you were angry today. That was one of the most angry games I've seen you pitch. And I mean, I dominated, got on the bus and drove back to the hotel with my brown paper bag of beer and had my sunglasses on, crying on the way back because I knew how miserable I was. And, it was an ongoing, you know, story in my life of trying to find joy away from the game.
Yeah.
In any aspect that I could. And it just wasn't there.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. Yeah. That's not easy. You know, and I think about, you know, going back to our original conversation of, hey, the persona that we see on the field sometimes. And I actually got to, talk to a guy who's, had 62 months deployed in combat. Talked to this guy on Monday, and he said, you know, in his last tour, he was having the conversation with his wife. I have such a tough time being a Christian man doing the things that I'm doing, and obviously playing a sport and being in combat's different, but there's a higher level there. Right. Yep. But there's a similarity in the sense that when you go to compete, you've got that mindset in there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you think about what's life like today, and I'll, you know, CD is, coaching the high school baseball team. He's one of the coaches with, how great would it be to have, CD as one of your coaches, Carp's coach there before too. But, you know, where I was impressed is, hey, as much as, you know, anger and things like that may have fueled you on the field, they had a terrible call, just an awful call in this. I was so proud of our coaches for keeping their Christian witness during that time. But, but you know, that becomes a piece. And now you get on the other side. Now we're on the other side of baseball. So walk through a little bit, both you guys, you know, what's your daily walk, today? Who are your boys? Who, you know, what's that look like so that you're close to Christ, you're walking in community, where's the joy in that? And how's that different than where you were before?
Yeah. One of the things that I want to say before I really get into that is, right when I retired, we have, Carp and I have a mutual friend, Matt Holliday, Matt and Leslie Holliday. Jill and I were doing a podcast with the Holidays. And Matt, you know, said, I'm going to give Carp your number. He's living in the same area that y'all live in. And, I know you're thinking about retirement. I know you're kind of coming
getting ready to cross that bridge. He's like, he would be a great resource for you to have. And so he was huge for me right when I retired to kind of navigate that next phase of life, because he had been retired for a few years. But I always really appreciated that about him, because I think especially in baseball, it's such a strong fraternity of players. Mm-hmm. And when we came up, it was always leave the game in better shape than it was when you got there. Make sure that you take care of yourself. Make sure you take care of those around you. Make sure you take care of those that come behind you. And so I was really lost when I retired, but I knew that I wanted certain things. And I think, you know, you alluded to it earlier. We were both kind of angry competitors. And one of the things that he said to me early on, we would go grab coffee once a week, that really just kind of stuck with me and resonated with me, was I realized, and I'm not going to tell the rec league basketball story, but he's like, I realized that I'm never going to be able to compete like I did in baseball at anything else in life, just because we are so competitive and we are so spirited and energetic and passionate about what we did. That you can't really go down that road in when you're outside of, you know, when you're outside of the game. And I think that's hard to realize, because baseball was so fulfilling at times.
Sure.
You do get that adrenaline rush when you're in those situations, and you got the stadium, all eyes are on you, all that energy is focused on you, and everybody's anticipating your next move. I think that's something that, you know, I definitely miss. But on the backside of my career, the thing that I really wanted as I got into retirement was I wanted peace. And I wanted to be joyful. I wanted to be compassionate for others. I didn't want to be hardened anymore. I didn't want to be shut off. I wanted to be available for my family and my friends. And I wanted to serve, I wanted to give back, and I didn't know what that was going to look like, until, you know, a few months ago. But I think one of the biggest things is I do have guys like Carp, guys that I played with, that still live in the area, that we can get together and play golf and talk about the good old days, but also really appreciate where we're at in life now. And I think that's something that, I would really, just want to emphasize to guys, is enjoy your time in the game right now and make the most of that opportunity, because once it's gone, you can't get it back.
True.
And all the hardships and all the things that you struggle with and all the challenges that you're going to face, sometimes it sucks when you're going right through it. And sometimes you're fighting back tears because you don't have the answer and you feel like you're letting everybody down, or maybe you're having success and you just don't feel fulfilled. There's relief on the other side of that. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that has driven me, to really partner with you and CBF is, you know, I wanted guys to know that there's relief on the other side of that. And being retired is great. I mean, I get to see my kids every night. I get to see my wife every night. I can go on golf trips. I can go on hunting trips. I can leave for a few days and come back and coach high school baseball and pour into the next generation of players. And I think that's really what gives me life now. And, Carp and I play a lot of golf together. We are very passionate about the next group of players, which is obviously why we're involved with this. Sure. But yeah, I think really my heart is to just kind of reiterate, like, enjoy your time that you have in the game, because it's gone in a hurry, and you can't get it back.
Yeah. I just was going to, I think, you get to a point. I was just having this conversation with Carrie last night. We were talking about when we first got married or got together, and her also, just with personal stuff and then other things that were going on in our life. I was still angry. Mm. Like there was still a lot of anger that came out in certain situations. Just because of who I built myself into as I was playing, and then two personal things that happened outside of the game. And we were talking last night at dinner about how, which it's an ongoing struggle, or not struggle, but ongoing journey, is like my peace and my anger is cut back, and I feel more peaceful, and I find myself more present, which I probably wasn't present enough with Sam and Ava, my older children, at the moment. I mean, I played the whole time that I had them, and I wasn't in there in the pool throwing them around all the time and having family dinners together and doing all that stuff. And I'm there now doing those with, but also with people, and like Chris and other guys around this area that we can go out and like you said, spend time together and laugh about the game and talk about how it used to be and, you know, be those old guys like back when I played, you know, like the game has changed now and arguing, you know, talking about how the game has changed. And then, excuse me. And then, you know, again, you find out and you reach people that like, I got a group of guys, which is so cool. Like again, COVID was crazy as could be, but it brought some coolness out of it. And that's Zoom calls.
Yeah.
And I have a Bible study every Monday, with about 10 guys, 8 or 10 guys of ex teammates of mine, different ages, that we meet every Monday and talk about the Bible and talk about what's going on in our life and how we're representing Jesus in our lives or what we need prayers for. And, so, I mean, that's where my life stands with my ex players and ex teammates and friends that are involved, because again, until you live in our game, like, and I know CD will say this, you know, until you live in our shoes, you have no clue what it's like.
Sure.
So when you step out of it, you know, you're talking about your military friend, you know, it's a tough comparison, but it's almost like we're in prison at times because we're just so separated from the real world.
Yeah.
Right. And what our job is and what we do and how we perform and how we have to compete and how we have to act. We're always on wherever you go. Right.
Yeah.
Especially if you play in a place that you grew up or people know you and you're living, right?
Yeah.
Like you're always on. No matter if you're going to dinner, Walmart, Target, wherever you're going, you have to be on, because there's, again, especially in today's world with cell phones and all that other stuff, if something happens, you've act a certain way, it's just like, man, it's blown up.
Yeah.
And that's hard. Yeah. Like I loved my game and it was a blessing to be able to play as long as I could and all that stuff. But there's things that come with it that are really hard.
Sure. And they don't talk, nobody talks about it. You know, it's like you, I don't know if it's guy code or what it is, but it's like we don't talk about the hard things and you don't, it's funny that you bring that up, because while you're sitting there saying that, like we're always representing the organization. We're always representing the fans. We're always representing our family. We're always representing this huge group of people. And so that determines a lot of times how we react to certain situations. Yeah. So being an aggressive guy, you know, being guys that are, you know, intense, there were a lot of times when there was a situation, you know, something happened and I couldn't react the way that I wanted to. And that made me more angry.
Yeah.
And you don't realize, I think you brought it up and made a really good point. You don't realize how much that builds up over time. And you don't really understand or know what to do with it. And so you just bury it and it just can, I mean, it takes a toll on you and you get to a point where you get tired of being angry. I mean, I just got so tired of being pissed off all the time.
Yeah. And when I played, I just broke stuff.
That's exactly how
I pulled up to the point where I broke a helmet, smashed a bat,
and
beat up a door underneath the tunnel that nobody saw. Right.
And it feels good, but you can't do that stuff in the real world now.
Are you sure?
You look like an idiot.
I wish I could. But yeah, I mean, it's.
I mean, y'all
it's
got insane. A little land. You can go buy some wood or something. Yeah, exactly. Something.
That's what I do. I go mow the lawn or rake racks, pick up sticks. I don't know. I go find something to do to be alone and be with myself and my thoughts. But it's definitely a.
No, that's the interesting thing. And it's as I was talking to the veteran the other day, and I thought about, you know, what you guys went through and what players are going through today. It's that, and I thought a little bit about, you know, David's mighty men, right? So these were fierce men who loved God, but man, they had to go slaughter people and they flat out slaughtered people. And so, you know, that's one of those places where it's this weird juxtaposition, right? Hey, be loving and kind. And yet when you're competing, you got to go compete with this level of passion. Yeah. And that's a struggle, I think, for all men to some extent. Hey, if I'm supposed to sell, if I'm supposed to achieve in business or wherever that is. And most of the players don't get to go, hey, I don't have to work anymore. Right. So,
you know, it's funny, like one of the guys on my Zoom call that I do Bible study is Adam Wainwright, who's played a long time, had a real successful career, and also one of the guys in my life that has mentored me in my Christ following. But he just said the other day, we were talking about it, and he was like, when you compete, he's like, I didn't have like these weird, like, I wasn't just like going out to compete and doing like, here we go, I'm going to have fun, I love Jesus. He said he would specifically pray before games to have the power and strength of David.
Yeah. Yeah.
That he wanted to go out and beat these guys to a pulp.
Yes.
Like, and he'd be like, Jesus, give me the power to go out and just absolutely crush these guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting because I didn't, at the time when I was playing, I wasn't in a relationship with Jesus. I didn't, like, I just thought you'd just go out and kill people. Yeah. You know what I mean? But you can
not
actually,
with a higher purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I don't think you get to that level without that mentality, some sort of mentality, you know, like the, I always think of it as the warrior mentality.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want to go out and just win. I wanted to dominate.
Yeah.
And it was like, it didn't matter who, you know, if the guy on the mound was a Christian, it didn't matter if he was a friend. It didn't matter if I even knew him. You know, I was like, I didn't want to be the one to lose. And not only did I want to win, but I wanted to assert my dominance.
Yeah.
And I think that that's such a weird, you know, dynamic when you talk about being a Christian, but David's mighty men, Benaiah, is one of my favorite stories.
Yeah.
I mean, killing the lion, jumping down to the lion's den and killing a lion with a spear. That to me is like, that's who I want to be. And that's who I want to be viewed as, especially in the arena of competition. But it's funny. And you kind of alluded to this earlier. You asked a question about, you know, like kind of that balance. A lot of times I feel like as a Christian in baseball or as a Christian in professional sports, you're viewed as a hypocrite because they see who you are on the field and they see who you are. And my biggest thing for me was I have a horrible language when I get really upset. And so in order for me not to cuss, I started snapping the bat over my knee and then it became like my thing, you know? And so it's like, I'd punch out three times and we'd be in New York and they'd be like, break the bat over your knee. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. Like, I just got this bat and I really liked it. I plan on making contact with it at some point, you know? But it was, and then the game would end. And then on Sundays, you know, we have chapel and I'm rounding everybody up for chapel, or once a week at home, we show up early and I'm helping lead the Bible study. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you say you're this guy, but you're showing us that you're this guy. And I think one of the things, and Steve Foster's the guy who actually said this, he pitched in the big leagues, for a while. He's friends with Skip. He was with the Rockies organization for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Great dude, great man. One of the things he said is, you know, I would go to round guys up for chapel on Sunday morning and all these guys would look at us and they're like, dude, I've seen you drinking and cussing and, you know, and doing all this other stuff, you know, you're just a hypocrite. And his response was like, no, I just know that I need Jesus. I know that I'm a sinner and I know that I need Jesus. And this is me admitting that I need Jesus. And I want you to have the same thing that I have.
Yeah.
And he's like, so you don't call me a hypocrite. I know that I'm a sinner. I know that I'm dirty. Like, I'm not going in there to act like I'm holy. I'm going in there to be fed and to be poured into and to be made righteous through Christ. And I thought that was such a good answer, you know, and I'm like, that's what it's about. It's not about me thinking that I'm better than you or me thinking that I have something that you can't have. It's like, no, man, I need help. You know, like, I'm a sinner. Like, I need all the help I can get. And it's available for you too, you know?
Well, and I think that's a beautiful thing that's shifted in a lot of churches, in the big C church, right? Is that, hey, there's an openness now to be transparent.
Yes.
That, hey, I do struggle, right? I do, you know, growing up, I know, and certainly in my world, oh, they went to counseling, you know, like anything like that was, hey, you're showing that you're not a perfect Christian kind of thing. And so I think that's one of the interesting things that, you know, and it's part of why I like to take you guys into locker rooms. Like that's cool for me to be there because you're open or raw. And yeah, maybe there's some language in there and stuff, but hey, we're all on this progression, right? We have not arrived. We do not fully control the tongue. Like I said, my late mother would probably freak out at some of the conversations, certainly the locker room conversations, right? She'd have a tough time with that, but that's real.
Yes.
And especially if you're going from, you're in that party scene today, or you're in, you know, I've had a lot of exposure to college baseball players in the last couple of years with future son-in-law and really getting to be close to a team and kind of seeing how guys are living in the struggle that they're in the middle of. And for you guys to actually go, hey, I still struggle with these things. I still, and I'm a work in progress. Yeah. It's impactful.
I think there's a big shift, really, you know, in the last couple of years, but for me, I've seen more of it in the last few months of this, like, what is masculinity in today's society? Mm-hmm. Because I think in the past it was, you're tough. You figure it out on your own. You don't talk about your emotions. You don't even have emotions most of the time. And I think it's gotten to the point now, and we've seen it in sports with mental health. And we've heard stories about guys, you know, attempting suicide or contemplating suicide, because of the amount of pressure that they feel and the struggles that they're going through. And I think that there's just been this shift to where it's like, okay, you can be a tough guy and still struggle and mm-hmm. still talk about, hey man, I still struggle with this right now. Like, I'm struggling with, you know, X, Y, and Z over here. I don't know what to do about it. And I need help. And I think that that's really kind of the shift that we're seeing now. It's like, instead of acting like you have everything together and being scared and being afraid and being upset and feeling alone and going through it by yourself, let's kind of shed light on some of these things and get them out in the open, because 9 times out of 10, the guy sitting next to you is going through something similar.
Same thing.
And so instead of just bottling all this up and burying it and then it blowing up in other areas of our life, or it escalating to the point where, you know, God forbid you think about taking your own life, let's get some of this out in the open and let's talk about this and let's start working towards a solution, because there's strength in that. Yeah. And it takes a strong man to stand up and say, I don't have it all together. I've got things that I struggle with and I need help. To me, that is strength and that is masculinity. And you can be tough and still be emotional and still have problems and still voice those things.
And I think that's great as a parent, right? Yes. You can do it anywhere, like teaching our kids the same.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I'm not, like, my kids look at me like, oh my gosh, you're the strongest man I've ever seen. And you can do all these things. But I am a weak at times and I have struggle. And as my two older kids have gotten, you know, to the ages that they are, and me being able to have more mature conversation with them, excuse me, they see that, oh my gosh, like, it wasn't that easy 15 years ago when you were playing.
Yeah.
There was a lot of struggle that you went through, and I just think it's a great education for our kids too. And I have the opportunity now with my stepdaughter who's 9 to be able to influence her that way, that be like, hey, this is what a real man looks like.
Yeah.
He is vulnerable. He is soft. He does have emotions. He is kind to his wife. It's not about, you know, he's a servant heart, like all kinds of different things of what that looks like. And that's what I try to live like and model each and every day, is these standards of what that's supposed to look like. And again, you can read it everywhere in the Bible, and that's just godlike, right? Yeah. I'm not saying I'm God, but I want to do the best that I can to live a life and model a life to the people around me of what that looks like. I'm not good at it all the time. Like I said, there's still times where things come out of my mouth that aren't supposed to come out of my mouth, or I have an angry day that I can't get away from. I mean, it happened. I was out playing golf, and I ended up, this was a couple of weeks ago, and I'm sitting there. I walked off the course. Like, I don't know what was wrong with me, but I was having one of those days, and I knew it. And I was trying to figure out around me, like, pick things out to be joyful about. Like, and I couldn't.
Yeah.
And I drove right over to my car, threw my golf clubs in my back of my car, put my golf cart up and drove home. And my Carrie was like, what? And I was like, I'm having a bad day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's like, okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's real life.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and I think that's it was much later in life when I started spending time in Psalms.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go, all right, David's a man after God's own heart, but look at all the struggle all the time.
Yeah.
Saying, hey, God, where are you? Where are you? You know, save me, save me. And that was a constant deal. Come now.
Yeah.
And I think growing up, and it's that same thing, you couldn't not be okay.
Right.
Growing up, and, you know, Matt Chandler at the Village Church says that all the time, right? It's okay to not be okay.
Right.
It's not okay to stay there, but it's okay to not be okay. And I think that's the thing that we're kind of waking up to a little bit now, in certainly if you're hanging out in the right places, you can get to that point that, hey, this thing's hard.
Yeah.
This life thing is tough.
Yeah. When I first came back to Christ, one of the comments that was made, and I think it was by Mike Matheny, who's a really close friend of mine. He was a manager, player, teammate of mine, is following Jesus is not supposed to be easy.
Right.
Mm-mm. It doesn't make, you know, all of a sudden you're like, hey, I'm saved and I'm a Christ follower, that your life is perfect and easy.
Sure.
It's still real life. Like, we deal with all the same things that everybody else deals with. We just have a foundation to fall back on and ask for help.
Sure.
And ask for forgiveness and guidance. And
yeah. I think one of the things too that I would encourage guys, especially at the college level, and I think we've seen such a big change in landscape over the last few years with the NIL, and I think that there's just a tremendous amount of pressure that was already on these student athletes to perform in the classrooms and on the field, and now we're putting even more pressure on these guys. Is a lot of the things that maybe you don't, that you think are sinful in you, that, you know, your anger, your passion, you know, your things that may not always show up in positive areas of your life, those are a lot of the things that Jesus loves about you, and a lot of the things that God gave you and hardwired you with to make you the person that you are. Mm-hmm. And so instead of running from them or trying to, you know, water them down, I would say lean into those things. And it's okay to be competitive. Like, God gave you that competitive nature. Like, it's okay to be aggressive and passionate. Like, God made you that way for a specific reason. And I think once you start to understand that those are gifts and not curses, mm-hmm. It really frees you up and allows you to use them to glorify Him. And it's like, you can still be competitive and be angry on the field and be a Christian and love Jesus. Like, it's, you know, it doesn't have to look a certain way, to your mm-hmm. point. I think that it's just, we have this like false narrative that we think that we have to uphold when being a Christian man, that like, I can't cuss and I can't have impure thoughts and I can't get mad and I can't, like, that just shows our need for Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's the place for Jesus going, hey, come.
Yes.
And I think I mentioned the book was introduced to me recently, Gentle and Lowly, which mm-hmm. sounds the opposite of masculine, but this is Jesus really kind of inviting us back in to go, hey, I know you're broken. I know what I bought on the cross. I know I bought that broken thing that, by the way, I designed.
Yeah.
Come to me. So, hey, we're down to our last few minutes. So I was actually with a team that college team that finished out their last season. They graduated 15 players. A lot of those won't move on.
Yeah.
What would you say to the guy who baseball fell off the cliff, right? We talk about, you know, for almost every baseball player, you're a player and then you're not.
Yeah.
You're a former player. What would you say to those guys?
It's tough. I mean, it's tough whether you played, you know, 20 years in the big leagues or, you know, didn't get a chance to play pro ball. I sat on the bus after we lost in the regional tournament to with guys that I played college ball with that thought that they were going to have a chance to play at the next level and realized that they didn't, and watched them cry and mm-hmm. was thankful that I was going to have the opportunity to carry on. But, you know, and was fortunate to play as long as I did, but it's tough, man. When it's been such a big part of your life for so long and it's taken away, it's just a very odd feeling. And it's something that's very hard to go through. But I think my advice would be lean on those people around you that care about you and care about your well-being, and understand that if you know Jesus, then while you were a baseball player for a long time, that's just what you did. It's not who you are. And I think the identity piece is so big. I mean, He gave you the skill set to play the game at a high level. And if you played at college, you played at a high level. And be thankful for the opportunity that you had. Reminisce on the good times and remember those, but understand that He's got something greater for you down the road. And it's hard to see when it ends abruptly. But it's, there's so much more life on the backside of it. And it's okay to be hurting and to be, you know, almost in a state of mourning that it's over.
Grieving. Sure.
Grieving. Yeah. Yeah. But really lean on those guys around you that, you know, care about you and want the best for you and understand that your identity is not wrapped up in the game of baseball. And if you don't know Jesus, I would encourage you to surround yourself with people
that care about you and that do know Jesus, and realize that he does care about you, he does love you, and he does want the best for you.
Go explore.
Yeah, I mean, for me, super, super simple, and that's, it's going to be okay. Yeah, like it will be okay. And like CD said, is surround yourself with the right people, hold yourself to the proper standard of living and modeling that. It's going to be okay. It doesn't mean it's going to be easy. But it's going to be okay. And that's something that I wish I led up to, right? My college years were spent in professional baseball. I wish I knew that early on, was that no matter what happens down the road, that it's all going to be okay. And I didn't experience that. I saw people around me that could, but I didn't experience it. And so
that's great. Well, thanks, guys. So if you want to learn more about College Baseball Fellowship, collegebaseballfellowship.org. And we certainly take donations and that sort of thing. We're in the process of, if you are a baseball player, you're a baseball coach, at any college level, and you're interested in having, CD or Carp, or we've got Cody Allen, we've got Cody Bradford, David Murphy and Sean Tolleson are in to come and speak where we can, reach out through College Baseball Fellowship.org. You can get to me certainly on Instagram. You can find us there. But other than that, thanks, guys.
Yeah,
appreciate it.